Hello, 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 and welcome to a very special edition of Liberty Blue Conversations. Joining the show today, one of the few Ducks fans I know, one of the more interesting creators, somebody who I'm going to admit this is kind of stupid, but I've been following you on TikTok a lot longer than on Twitter, and I did not put two and two together because, like, you're a lot more present on TikTok than you are on Twitter. So I didn't put two and two together till like maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I was like, wait a minute, these are the same person.
Wait, 2 or 3 months ago?
Yeah, not that recently. I don't know. I'm not great, okay?
I mean, I figured it would be somewhat like putting two and two. I didn't know it was that recent.
Yeah, no, in the last couple months, I was like, wait a minute.
That's funny.
So how are we doing, my dude?
I'm doing well, doing well. Been a bit on a 72-hour bender. Went to games in all 3 days in a row, so I feel like I'm finally like, finally calm, coming back down to earth here a bit, but can't complain. How about you?
This is the fun part of the year. Like, 6 hours of sleep isn't great, 12 hours of screen time a day isn't great, but this is fun.
Like, did you see Elliot Friedman? He's like, I have 17 hours of screen time a day, like, average. I was like, it's got to be more than that for him.
If I'm at like 12 or 13 and I'm not, you know, I'm not the professional here, I can't even imagine. He's got to be full of it, because that would be like all of, you know, if I could see, realistically, I could see 18, 19, I could even see 20 hours in the next day and a half.
Totally. Yeah. And that's, I forget what was, because that's like an average too. So like there's definitely days as he gets in. But do you have like notification? Do you have tweet notifications on from these people? Or are you just
aimlessly scrolling? No. I have like for 6 or 7 of them, of the more reliable people who've been doing this a while. And partly because I'm stupid, you know, I'll see the tweet and I won't look at the at fully, or I won't realize.
You have to click. Yeah. Every time. Because like back in the day on like hockey Twitter, I think nowadays, like especially with the check marks going away and people having to pay for those, but some people could really like just change like the I and L, and like you would easily get tricked by those things. Nowadays, people are more careful, but I like check. Every time I see an Elliot Friedman tweet, I go, or a LeBron tweet, I go and I have to check the profile. Okay, this is legit. And then Frank Saravalli, I just don't listen to him. So I just kind of scroll past anything he says. But for the, like you said, for the reliable guys, I keep those in check.
How are you coping with having to name a son Patrick?
The funny thing about that is my youngest brother's name is Patrick. So I kind of, I tweeted that. So I, you know, amidst the trade deadline, I was grabbing coffee, like usual stuff. And I get in, I see the trade not fully come through. I just knew it was Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick to Edmonton. Didn't know the return. We knew there was a third team involved. I was like, I can't be in the car while this is happening. Like, I need to be present when I know what's coming back here. And I just thought about it. And I was just like, listen, like, is it out of the realm of possibility to name a son Patrick? No. Like, I'm Irish. Like, my brother's named Patrick. I got cousins named Patrick. Like, could be worse. You know, it is what it is. And it ended up being a first round pick. And the Ducks actually responded to it as well. So, and there's a bunch of bookmarks on it now. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get checked whenever. I might have to go like the celebrity Vogue route and just be like completely under wraps when I start having kids and just not post them. And just no one's going to know ever. I guess I'm going to have to go rogue for 9 months when that happens. But no, it wouldn't be the end of the world. So it would be, could be a lot worse first names.
You're probably safe because Twitter will be dead by then. You're probably safe that the website will probably no longer exist, and only the people crazy enough to screenshot it and then try and track you down on another platform to hold you to this.
Years later.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Remember when you said this?
Internet's a weird place. Internet is a very weird place.
Well, I posted this. It's funny you bring that up because I posted this TikTok yesterday, and I will stand by this take, you know, to my, I don't think it's unrealistic at all, is that I was talking about the trade, the full trade, and I love that the Ducks got a first rounder out of Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick, especially at 50% retained. I think that's a bare minimum. That's a very fair exchange for Pat Verbeek to want a first round when you're willing to do that. But some guy was like, oh, it's TikTok comments, you know how it goes. And he was like, oh, the Ducks will be irrelevant for the next 8 years. I'm like, bruh. So I posted something, and usually there's like this TikTok trend where you like read a mean comment and then you like act like they're saying something else. And for me, I was like, oh yeah, Ducks have a great, you know, deep prospect pool, lots of young talent. They'll be back in the playoff hunt in the next 3 years. And I stand by that. I think with this team and where things are going, I think 3 years being back in that wild card hunt, chasing down, they're not going to be a cup contender in 3 years. I think they're competing for a wild card spot in the West. Yes, absolutely. If they have a healthy team and if things keep progressing the way they go, yes. And I'm getting dragged for it. Like, just people that either don't watch the team or don't understand just the young talent that's coming up with the Ducks. But it's, people are like, oh, I'll check back in 3 years. I'll check back in 5 years. I was like, you're not going to remember me in 3 years. You're not going to remember this video. But like you said, the internet's a weird place. So I wouldn't be shocked if in 3 years' time I'm doing something else and all of a sudden I see a message come through and be like, hey, remember when you said this? I'll be like, all right.
I don't think that's a ridiculous take. I understand the vision. The Ducks are playing the longest of long game humanly possible. They are getting I hate to make this pun, but they are getting their ducks in a row. They are trying to to set up a window of young guys where the bones of a decent team are there. You know, I really like some of the guys. I really like Leo Carlson, who I know he hasn't played a ton this year, but I really liked taking him. I liked the idea of swapping Drysdale for Gauthier. Even though I like Drysdale's game, he hasn't stayed healthy and it just hasn't like totally clicked for him. But I understand the vision. I see that they're accruing a lot of these young guys and then supplementing that with, you know, the Kalorns, the Ryan Stroms, the Vetranos. So this isn't like the Sabres were 5 or 6 years ago where it was just Jack Eichel and a bunch of bums, basically. Ducks are doing the best they can to put together an environment that when one or two of these young guys are really kind of at their point where they're ready to lead a team, then they can start adding real pieces around them.
Exactly. And the fact that the fact that free agents are still looking at the situation here, like you look at, you know, I believe that hockey can work in Arizona, but you know, you don't blame, you know, UFAs in the summer looking at places to sign. You don't blame them for turning their nose up to Arizona right now, given the state of the franchise. And hey, if you don't want to play in a 5,000 seat college arena, as a professional hockey player, I can't blame you. But they're not turning their nose up to the likes of Buffalo, to the likes of, you know, Ottawa, even now Ottawa for sure. But, you know, it's still an appealing environment for the Alex Kalorns, for the Radko Gudases to come in, which, by the way, has been an absolutely great free agent asset, I think, to the Ducks team this year and great for that blue line. But it's the fact that even in the state that they're in, like, veterans are seeing, hey, there's a lot of young talent here. I can come in, be a veteran, get a nice payday because, hey, the Ducks have money to spend here. And that's how they're able to retain 50% of some of these guys' salary going into the trade deadline. And it's nice to have that flexibility. And Pat Verbeek is totally utilizing that at this point. And, you know, fans are upset because they're seeing a lot of free agent, a lot of their fan favorites go. And obviously there was a lot of hate around Drysdale getting shipped out. But the fact of it is that the Ducks are pretty loaded on the blue line, especially in terms of the young guys here, whereas shipping out a guy like Drysdale to supplement a place where you're lacking, which is in that offensive power, it's in that just pure goal score. And you get that in a kid like Cutter Gauthier, who is in the top of goal scoring in NCAA this year. So I have no reason to doubt the Verbeek vision as of now. I like the way he does things. And I like the way things are going. It's just about, I mean, these guys got to stay healthy. This year, that's been this team is a lot better if the key guys and the young guys are staying healthy. Like yesterday, even though the Ducks won yesterday, but it was just very bleak the first two periods of hockey. And that's just, you got Carlson, McTavish, Zegras, Terry, everybody's out injured right now. And listen, at this point, there's no use in rushing back. You're not trying to fight for a playoff spot here. Season's ending in about a month. No point rushing anybody back to try and get hurt again. But it's, you know, rebuilds take time, but I also think that a lot of people think that the rebuilds began when Verbeek came in, which the rebuild was really a couple years prior, even though like it took Bob Murray a little bit to admit that, hey, we need more than a retool. We need to full on tear this thing down.
I was talking about somebody with this the other day, because one of my friends, he's a casual hockey fan, and he's like, how come McDavid's never really had the great playoff run yet? And I always bring up that series against the Ducks that first year. He stayed fully healthy, and the Ducks went to the conference final. And that really kind of, that really felt like the last wave for that Getzlaf-Perry core. That was a good team that had a lot of guys, and they just kind of aged out. It wasn't like that they weren't good anymore. It's just they got old, and that's what happened. I mean, those teams went to the playoffs consistently. They went deep in the playoffs a fair amount. And eventually, as you said, you got to look in the mirror and kind of admit, yeah, these are still Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaf, but, you know, these aren't the Hart Trophy caliber players they were 5-6 years ago. And it took them a little while. Now that they're taking their time to kind of look, and there really seems to be a plan. And that's part of why, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, that's why I don't really want the Rangers trading with the Ducks.
It's, you know, you think back to like that 2017 era. I mean, God, they had they brought back Randy Carlyle to coach that the second coaching stint. Don't get me started on that. But I think for a while, the Ducks really had this presence as one of the more physical hockey teams, which made them really hard to play against, especially against a lot of those like Eastern, they used to call like the California teams. I forget which coach called them like recently. It was like within the last year or two. They used to say, you know, that those California road trips of San Jose, LA, and Anaheim used to be just like the death, like a gut punch, because those were hard teams to play against. But the Ducks were really branded in that physical style of hockey. And it really felt like, whether it was Bob Murray really kind of slow to the role there, but they really didn't evolve with the game as the game was getting younger, faster, more skilled. And the Ducks were kind of still in that mold of just physical hockey, which, hey, still has a place. But if you're not growing with the game and evolving as the game evolves, you can't expect to make it far, especially, I mean, granted, make it past the conference final, but that's the furthest they've made it since. So it was much needed. I mean, finally that, you know, and I think it also helped that, and I hate to say that it helped, but like Bob Murray was the GM for so long, and ownership, they were buddies with him. So the fact that like all that stuff came out about him, you know, with the workplace environment, although awful ending, but like it ended up being for the best, because it almost forced the hand of ownership to say, okay, now we got to bring somebody in that's an actual hockey mind, that's willing to just come in, rebuild. Because at the end of the day, ownership wants to make money. They want and play what makes money, playoff hockey. That's what makes money in Anaheim specifically. And they've been out of the playoff. They had, at the time, had been out of the playoffs for what, 3-4 seasons, I want to say, at the time. So the fact that they fully admit, hey, we don't know anything about hockey here, so we're going to put it all on you. We're not going to force your hand, try and force you to make moves, which, hey, as we know, some owners do that. So hands off, let you do your thing. And they brought that in with Pat Verbeek. So It's been an evolution process, but this fan base also really hasn't had to go through a rebuild like this prior to, of course, being a new team in the league. And hey, you're going to suck for a little bit, with the exception of Vegas, of course. But back in the day, like, expansion franchises weren't good. So with the exception of that, like, this fan base is really having to face some adversity at this time. And some people are more patient than others. So,
and the thing that's good about it is once you embrace the idea of a rebuild, it becomes a lot more bearable to have a bad team, because you see the plan, especially a team like the Ducks, who they've got a decent group of young guys where it's okay. These are going to be the guys for the next 5, 6, 7 years. They're going to build the team around them. And if they stay healthy and they stay on their trajectories, these are really good players. Like Mason McTavish really kind of, I don't want to say came out of nowhere, because, you know, the amateur pedigree was there, but I didn't think he would be this good. Same deal when it comes to Troy Terry. I didn't expect him to be this good. And when you've hit on those guys, you know, you get him. Zegras is in there, who, when he's healthy, is one of the more dynamic. I won't say he's the most well-rounded, but he's a dynamic player, which there aren't a lot of in the league. So I think it becomes a lot more bearable when you see the long-term vision, whereas, you know, there are teams that, you know, the Senators are still in their rebuild since, you know, they traded Stone and Carlson. You could talk about them, talk about the Sabres. There are a lot of teams where they say they're going to rebuild, but don't ever actually start building anything.
Right. I mean, the perfect example I can think of, you know, doing a rebuild right, and maybe not essentially like a full teardown rebuild, but what year was it with the Rangers? It was right before the trade deadline, where the Rangers sent out that note to the fan base and they said, hey, we can either buy and have a first round exit, or we can trade away some of your fan favorites and we can build something here. He says, you're not going to, as a Ducks fan at the time where there was no transparency, I respected that transparency, especially coming from an original six franchise like that, where granted you can take that stance where we don't owe our fans anything. We can just do what we got to do, but to full on say, hey, we don't want to be a first round exit. We don't want to, you know, go in and go out. We want to build, take advantage while we can, trade these guys who, hey, you may be sad to see go, but I think that's the way to do it. And especially nowadays where, no, do you owe your fans things? I think in some cases you do, but I think some communication about, hey, what's the plan moving forward here? And that really makes your fans feel like they're a part of it too. And I think that's been key, especially in this new regime. While Pat Verbeek plays things very close to the chest, which I love about him personally, I love that the Ducks are just very under the radar for the most part, especially, I mean, the Leo Carlson draft pick where nobody knew what he was going to do. I honestly, as soon as once I heard that other GMs had no idea which way he was going to go, I was like, he's taking Leo. Like, if he was taking Fantilli, people would know. But then the Cutter Gauthier whole deal that just exploded Twitter. It's like no sign of anything, no traction there. I bet when Danny Briere was like, oh, can we keep this under wraps, Pat Verbeek was like, say less, you've come to the right place. But yeah, like you said, like rebuild, it's easier once you're bought in and once you kind of see the pieces coming together and you're like, okay. And even more fun now, like now that the Getzlaff era is over, you're kind of looking at this group here and you're like, who's the next captain? That's been a fun discussion. And like names have changed. Like for a while it was, hey, Easy Fowler, he's never been my choice for captain just because I think he's getting older. And I like the idea of picking a younger guy. And that's going to be a part of the core. That's going to be a part of the team that you want to take to the cup. And I don't think Cam Fowler is going to be a part of that picture personally. So I like the idea of a Troy Terry. You know, Mason McTavish is really coming up and making himself known as a leader on the team. You obviously look at a guy like Leo Carlson as well, who's so well-spoken, I think. But it's a fun discussion, and it's fun to kind of get excited about the future in those aspects.
In regards to Zegras, I find guys like him, I feel him, Jack Hughes, that younger, that smaller archetype, I find it fascinating because all of the hockey men project their insecurities onto them, where they're so much more explosive. And there's like John Tortorella did not play at the NHL level. There is no reason he should. You know, the joke, why are you a grown man and your biggest op is 19? Like, why why is Trevor Zegras attempting Michigan goals this upsetting to you? Why are you this mad about it? It's the same thing with Jack Hughes. Like, these guys are legitimately really good hockey players. Yeah, they don't look like the hockey players of 10, 15, 20 years ago, but they're infinitely more exciting. Like, I think about how far we've come. You were talking about before how the Ducks used to be this big, physically imposing team, and that wasn't that long ago. You know, we're talking in a 5-10 year window where the average NHL player, you know, an inch or two shorter, 5-10 pounds lighter, and it really translates and it's really exciting. And why are we not having fun? I feel like hockey is like 10 years behind the other sports. I feel like baseball was doing this 10 years ago. Are we going to let the young guys have fun, or are we going to police it the way it's always been? And I still feel like there are people who refuse to accept, you know, this is supposed to be fun. Like, this is entertainment.
Totally. Totally. And especially like there's something the fact of like when Zegras did the alley-oop assist and then the Michigan after that, and the amount of little kids that were out there trying it themselves, like it's cool to get younger kids excited about the game. And that, of course, you know, all the outrage about him, and of course that the Athletic poll where most of the players said he was overrated. I'm like, overrated in the sense of like, and it's so funny because back when, you know, all that stuff was happening, people were saying, oh, the league needs to market this kid. And yes, they absolutely do. And they were doing that. They brought him to the All-Star game to do the breakaway challenge, which was absolutely a great move to do. Albeit the breakaway challenge was not my favorite event. I think it's kind of lost its luster since since 2009 when Malkin and Ovechkin did the did the thing in Montreal and the Superman cane and Perry with the mini stick and stuff like that. I think it's kind of gotten a little too cheesy at this point. But then they put him on the cover of the video game, and which I people take, I mean, I'm not a gamer, so I really feel like I'm not a in the place to say, you know, maybe this isn't my place to say things, but I'm like, you're getting mad about a video game cover. We're not talking about giving him the Hart Trophy. We're not giving him the Ted Lindsay here. He's on the cover of a video game. Like, it's really not that deep, respectfully. But I have no problem. I'm a proponent of growing the game. I always will be. And if these guys having fun, you forget that these kids are, how old is Zegras now? 22, 23? Yeah. Like, still young. He's still figuring out who he is. And he's having fun, like, forced into an adult job at, what, 19 years old amongst grown men? Yeah, it's going to take, there's some growing pains. There's some things he needs to learn, grow up, mature. But I mean, one of those things is not doing the Michigan. I mean, let the kid have fun. If he wants to, I mean, granted, like, I get it, embarrassing for the other goalies and other teams, but hey, maybe you learn how to stop those. I don't know. Respectfully.
Get good is the answer. Exactly. Ultimately, for stuff like that, it's get good. If you don't want someone to pimp a home run, don't give up a home run. If you don't want the other team to score the Michigan, don't let them score the Michigan. And it's so interesting because that's what a lot of this, in my opinion, comes down to. It's why guys like Ryan Reeves will keep jobs, because there are people in hockey who look at him and say, that's what a hockey player looks like. He can play hockey. Trevor Zegras can play hockey. You know, there is no archetype. And that's part of what's charming about it, that Matt Zuccarello plays the same sport as Ryan Reeves. And Cole Caulfield plays the same sport as Ryan Reeves. That you have these guys, vastly different skill sets, vastly different styles, but they all play the same game. And I think that's really cool.
There's different, like, every team, you need your different types of player for every team. Every team needs, you got to have balance. And that's why, while I like the way the game, I think we're on the right track as far as safety and as far as the way the game's evolving, I do think, like, enforcers do have a place in the game in some aspects. Those gritty fourth line guys will always have their role. Guys are willing to drop the gloves so your star players don't have to. Obviously not so much as what used to be, but I do think slightly like the Matt Rempes. I love the kid. I know you've got your take as a Rangers fan, but I mean, everyone's coming in saying, oh, we need to protect this kid. Someone needs to step up. I was like, this is a 21-year-old. He knows full well what he's doing. He's making his choice, making his impact on the team. And you know what? I know fans are loving it. I know fans are absolutely loving this guy, especially the old school, like, New York hockey fan that love that style of hockey. I could see them just eating him up. Like, it's been a wild, a couple weeks now that he's been in the league. It's hard to believe. Time is flying by since that Stadium Series game. But I, you know, obviously you don't want to see the kid, you know, doing anything to permanently hurt himself, but there's enough veterans, and with a guy like Peter Laviolette in that locker room, where, like, if things are going to go too far, someone's going to step up and say something. But for now, like, it's not our job to do that.
He's up like 50,000 Instagram followers in the month he's been on the team. So he was at like 6,000 before he got called up, and now he's over like 55,000. So yeah, he's really kind of had the whirlwind of coming from Western Canada to play for the Rangers for a month. He's probably going to go back down to the AHL after the deadline tomorrow, based on whoever they add. But it's a cool story. Yeah. You know, that's the thing. Especially in these long seasons, and this is going to sound ridiculous coming from somebody who never shuts up, but sometimes it's hard to get excited for a February regular season game. Sometimes it's like, oh God, what are we going to talk about on the show this week? They played three regular season games. They won two of them, not that convincingly. The problems are what they were last week. The good things are what they were last week. So when you get things like that to spice it up, you get things like the Stadium Series, that makes it fun.
Right.
Yeah. So speaking of the deadline, unfortunately, we're kind of at a point. The deadline is both great and it's also awful, because it's great because everybody thinks they can do this. Everybody to some degree thinks they know what players are worth. Everybody thinks to some degree, I play fantasy football. I play the video game. I can make this trade. I can use the cap friendly trade machine. The trade machine works. There are GMs who should invest in using the cap friendly trade machine. It might help them, in all honesty, get a better understanding.
It's so funny because you see some of the departments that some of these leagues have, you know, the analytics department, the amount of scouting, and you just think to yourself, you're like, I know people on Twitter that could probably do a decent job at being a general manager. Like, maybe not the best, I will say, just because, you know, I think The job's more than, you know, what we see at the surface level. But I think that people on Twitter would at least hang in there.
Yeah.
As a general manager of an NHL team.
You're telling me Peter Chiarelli's going to get a third try before somebody on Twitter? Like, Peter Chiarelli, Chuck Fletcher, Ron Hextall, like, these guys who have multiple stints of just being bad in different places, like, at least learn your lesson. Like, if you're going to get a second crack, don't make the same mistake.
Exactly. And a deadline, I feel like so many people, like, there's this conception, they're like, oh, you know, you kind of decide, you're like, oh, is it a buyer's market? Is it a seller's market? And then you get to the deadline, you just see some of these moves. You're like, okay, I guess this is not what he's going for. All right. And like, which was it, Sean Monahan getting traded for a first rounder. Everyone's like, oh, Adam Henrique will alone get a first rounder. No, you had to package Sam Carrick into that in order to justify that from them. And then what was it? A conditional fifth going to fourth next year, I believe that was. But I know everybody, once the deadline starts hitting and then you just kind of see, you're like, what is and then you think like deadline's Friday, but then like Wednesday, everyone's like, oh, we got to start making moves now. And there's still plenty of names on the board. People are, I think how many people did Carolina put on waivers this morning?
Four or five
to try and clear up some space. And yeah, you can take advantage of teams that are, you know, a little desperate and wanting to add and, you know, compete. And you kind of saw that a little bit with Calgary trading Noah Hanifin to Vancouver. Well, as soon as Edmonton goes out and gets Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick, and then Calgary's like, well, we can't be having Edmonton get too good if we can't be competing for the cup. So it's fun to see you. Like, granted, like, yeah, you're going to make the best deal, but then you're also, if I'm a GM, I'm also thinking like, yeah, I kind of want to.
You got to be spiteful.
My rival. Totally.
That's what's really interesting about this, too, is that really does come up. Like, there are a lot of guys around the league where, like, I kind of like some of the guys on the Jackets as deadline fits for the Rangers. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. They fired the guy who's the GM of the Jackets now. That's probably not a phone call they can take. Oh, there are some guys on the Habs I would like to make a call for. Oh, yeah, that's right. We fired their president of hockey operations from our general manager. We probably can't call him either. And these are grown men who act like children. I know Shayna always makes the joke about Gossip Girl. It really is Gossip Girl on some degree, where you have these vague, opaque sentences that are very clearly copy and pasted from agent text messages onto feeds, where it's the most opaque thing ever. And it's just, these are grown men managing a children's game, acting like high school students. And it's fascinating.
Oh, it's so I'm waiting. Someone someday is going to hack into that. There's that GM's, I don't know if it's
group
a group chat
or
like a Discord. Someone on Twitter is going to hack into that. Someone's going to post it, hack into it one day. Like, it's just, these guys are not that smart.
No. That's why it has to be a group chat and not Discord. There are some guys in the GM. Lou Lamoriello does not know what Discord is. Lou Lamoriello does not know what Discord
is. Can you imagine?
That's a hilarious thought. Lou Lamoriello putting on an Xbox headset to sit on Discord in a room with 32. It's a funny visual, in all honesty.
It's so funny.
You mentioned it about like the departments and stuff. The Islanders have like six people in their scouting department for like the entire league. And that's because Lou has been in hockey since, I want to say, I looked this up a few weeks ago. Lou Lamoriello has been in hockey since, I want to say, JFK was president. Like, I'm not even exaggerating. Like, that's how long he has been in hockey. He was like, you know, in high school playing hockey, but we're talking about guys who've got 60 years of experience that are still hanging around at the same time as guys like Kyle Dubas, who are, you know, like 38.
I would pay to hear a discussion with them back and forth, like trying to negotiate a trade.
They work together, which is what's so fascinating.
That's true.
Oh, the Leafs are eminently fascinating. It's unfortunate that the Leafs suck the oxygen out of so much stuff because their drama is just so good. The drama in Toronto, because the media, the hockey media all being based in Toronto leads into this. But God, everything really does come back to the Leafs at some point.
Totally. I totally understand why players have no interest in going there. I completely get it. I understand like the appeal of playing there. Obviously, you're, you know, trying to think of a comparable like American franchise. Like, I don't think there is though.
In hockey, no. Not in hockey.
No, I'm trying to think of like another sport. What would
the Cowboys in football? The Cowboys in football, yeah, or the Lakers in basketball.
Like, I feel like the Leafs walking around Toronto, they just get easily recognized. Whereas, like an offensive lineman on the Dallas Cowboys could. I mean, granted, he'll stand out, you know, in a restaurant, but no one's going to be like chasing him down to try and get an autograph or something. But, and then of course, you know, like you said, everything's magnified. I mean, Montreal comparable, but Toronto's where everything is, and every little thing is just blown up out of proportion. And the funny, I don't know, I just feel like the littlest things that like kind of get swept under the rug, and like a market like Anaheim, markets like Arizona, Florida, things like that, the Leafs, it's the biggest deal in the world.
That's one of the things about Anaheim that's genuinely appealing. You get to live in California where you have great weather year round. You won't be annoyed ever because nobody's going to recognize you. That's another thing that appeals to people about playing for the Rangers is you're just another white guy in a suit here if you're on the subway.
Yeah.
You don't get bothered. So that's one of the things that's always interesting. As far as the deadline, you think they're going to trade for Toronto? Obviously, you know, it would make sense if they got the right thing. I know he's driving, Paverbeek's driving a really hard bargain, but do you have a feel either way if that's going to happen?
It's tough to say. I go back and forth because I think the biggest thing is, yeah, he's, the price is high. And you know, listen, if there's two things you know about Paverbeek is that he's a hard negotiator. He plays long ball. I mean, there's a reason why Zegras and Drysdale weren't signed until after training camp started. I mean, he hardballs his own his restricted free agent. So I think if any deal is going to come in, it's going to come in Friday, because I could see if whoever team is involved, whether it's the Rangers, whether it's somebody else, they're going to wait for that price to drop because it's a high price. And Verbeek's going to be like, no, I don't have to. I mean, Vetrano's on a very friendly money deal. They don't have to offload him. He's got one more year. The Ducks only benefit having him on for another year. So really, like, Verbeek's not sweating this. He's waiting to get that deal done right. But I do see, if I'm going with my gut, I'm going to say no. Mm-hmm. Because I just think the price would be, I just don't see him budging on a price like that. Unless, and if something does come in, it's at least a first round pick plus, just given his production this year. First round pick plus like a, maybe not a roster ready player, but like a mid-tier prospect at best. So, but that first rounder was going to be like the golden area around it, which is funny because I saw something, and if Cap Friendly's right, I think the Ducks have like 7 picks in the first 2 rounds this coming year, which is crazy. But I imagine some of those will get shipped out if, you know, there's any other moves to be made at the deadline. But I think Vetrano's kind of the big one. I can't, goalies won't be moved. There's no point in, well, Dostal obviously isn't moving, but you know, Gibson's name always comes up around the deadline, and there's no point right now because for one, Dostal's making his way as the starter, but you know, there's really no guy in the AHL has really solidified themselves as an NHL ready backup. So it makes sense to hang on to that tandem a little bit longer. Zegras isn't going anywhere. I'm not even entertaining that narrative that Sarah Volley unknowingly he knew it. He knowingly started it. But back to Vetrano, I'm going to say no. And that's what my gut is telling me. They hang on to him. But hey, if, you know, as a fan, I loved watching him play here, and especially this season, it's been so fun to watch him. But obviously, I'm happy to see Henrique go on and try and chase a cup with Edmonton. You want that for Vetrano, and you know, you can obviously get a great return for him. But you know, win-win either way. He goes on and chases a cup if he gets traded, or we hang on to him for another year where he will absolutely be getting a pay raise next contract he signs.
Yeah, I mean, making an all-star team is nothing to sneeze at. I know the Ducks kind of had the injury bug killed him this year, but he was having a really strong season before the all-star game. I think the one thing that could work in their favor and really kind of facilitate that is if the Rangers, Hurricanes, whoever's looking at the Gensel and Buchnevich markets, if they miss out on those guys, I think the natural pivot is Vetrano or Duclair. Yeah. So that is the one thing I could say that would speed this up, but facilitate it more likely to happen, because that's kind of what happened. We saw the musical chairs game get going where Henrique got traded, and then an hour and a half, 2 hours later, the Rangers were like, okay, we need a center. If we don't get Henrique, we really need to get somebody. So they pivoted to Wennberg. So the musical chairs is kind of what happens, and that's really the one thing that could speed up a Vetrano trade.
That's how it moves.
Yeah.
That Gensel, I'm very interested to see what Dubas fetches for Gensel. Cause you have to trade him. I think there's and granted, Dubas is coming into, I think it's unfair for Dubas to come in to this situation that he inherited from Ron Hextall and expect him to just completely magically change the Penguins into a cup contender. I mean, even trading for Erik Karlsson, that wasn't the case. But and he did his best, you know, adding in some of the bottom six guys, that some of which he was very familiar with. But I mean, watching that team play this year, I mean, it was just not clicking. And I don't think they did enough. He did enough during the season to try and change things, as seeing, hey, this isn't working. We got to switch something up here. And whether that's Mike Sullivan, I don't know. But the easiest, I mean, you got to trade Jake Guentzel. That's get the value for him while you can. I mean, are you going to sign? I mean, unless the plan originally was to sign him, lock him down in the offseason, which granted, I don't think it ever was. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here having this discussion. But it'll be interesting to see, because he's still hurt, isn't he?
He practiced for the first time in like a month this morning. So he's still on LTIR. But after the Rangers traded for Patrick Kane, who had one functioning hip last year, I'm not sure it matters if you're healthy or not to get traded. Like, there's no doctor on the planet that cleared a Patrick Kane physical last year. Like, if you read what he was describing, where it was like getting stabbed in the leg every time I tried to turn my body to skate, I don't understand how a guy could pass a physical if that's the case. So I don't think it really matters.
True. Yeah.
As far as sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just saying. I will be. That'll be make or break for him. But I mean, the Penguins fans were very happy with the return for Karlsson, and rightfully so.
They didn't give up anything.
No, exactly. And then, honestly, the Sharks should be happy only retaining what, 11%?
Something like that.
I think they only have like just over $1 million of his salary retained on, or just over $1.1 million, I think, of that salary. I was like, whoo, no way would Mike Greer do that. But no, the return that they get will be, I mean, that's either a riot worthy, or that's because some. Jake Guentzel's a great hockey player. I'm not saying that, but I do think, like, at times fans can overvalue their players.
For sure.
They should get an absolute haul for this guy. And it's just like, listen, here are the factors here. He's pending UFA, you know, it's not 2016, 2017 anymore. He's a great player without Sid. That the numbers prove that, but he's not going to have those guys to play with, you know. You always got to tone down like the return you're going to get. And that's why, like, when you bring up Vetrano, I was like, hey, it's not out of the world to think that a first rounder could come back for a guy that's having a productive season like that, but no insane package. Like, I jokingly said something where, no, it was Adam Henrique I made that joke about, but like the rumors of like Kaapo Kakko and a first round pick. I was like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, you're not trading a second overall pick and a first round pick for a guy like that. But
not just one guy. No, the framework of that bigger deal, I wouldn't love that. I wouldn't do the thing that I think was Emily Kaplan reported today, that the Ducks were asking for a first in Kakko for Henrique and Vetrano, which I probably wouldn't do, just because it would make another hole. Like, the Rangers need a right wing, and trading Kakko would mean you need two right wings, and Vetrano is only one person. So that's why I don't think that makes sense. But I do think there's a world where the Rangers end up with Vetrano again, just purely because of how things are shaking out. So opening it up a little bit more to the bigger conversation, it feels like the West is going to be a bloodbath this year.
I'm so excited. The East, you've got a few players in there. Florida's really fun to watch. Obviously, New York getting their wheels going again. But the West, I mean, Vancouver, I'm one of those people where, like, I was buying in on Vancouver, like, maybe too early. And now this year, to really see them hitting their stride, I was like, and as much like back in the day, of course, Vancouver, like, division rivals, you always have that animosity, but they're just a fun team. And obviously Thatcher Demko being from San Diego too, it's fun watching him succeed. But I mean, Dallas, you got Winnipeg out here, Colorado, obviously still tough, Vegas doing their thing, and everybody upset that they're utilizing LTIR, which, you know, every team can. I'm so sick. And granted, I'm not the biggest Vegas fan, but I'm so sick of people acting like Vegas is doing something illegal and just hating on them for that. I'm like, they're doing their thing. Like, they're not doing anything that's not.
Being a hater is fun. I can't dispute that. Being a hater is very fun. But the hall monitor, teacher, they're over the salary cap thing. Like, Tampa did this already 4 years ago. I don't know how we're still having the same conversation. If the owners cared that much, they would change the rule. There would be a salary cap in the playoffs, and that would be the end of the conversation. Teams want this there so that if the opportunity comes up for them, they can do it.
Right. Exactly. I mean, what Chicago did in 2015 too.
Yeah, with Kane. Yeah.
And they brought him back for the playoffs. Like, this is nothing new. It's just that Vegas, and, you know, everybody, like you said, being a hater is fun, and I'll admit it. Like, there are times when I love doing it too. But yeah, in those moments, you're just like, all right, let's ease it up now. Like, we've seen it done before. Vegas isn't the only team, and that won't be the last team that's doing this. But I want to buy in on Dallas because they're fun to watch, but. And I'm a fan of Jake Oettinger, but I think I'm not sold on him as a goalie quite yet, just in the playoffs in general, just because last season, that's kind of what killed them. But I forget where I was going with this, but so much happening in my head. But it's hard to say because, like, come playoff time, it's like all about who gets hot at the right time. I think last year, like, my bracket looked awful.
Oh, God. My bracket did horrendously last year.
Like, first round. And I was like, I watch hockey all season. Like, I pay attention as best I can league wide. And I thought I had a pretty good, solid chance. And of course, you know, Florida upsetting Boston. I was like, of course, we're done here. Okay. Throwing in the towel here. All right. But no, the West is going to be fun to watch, and it's fun getting into even like the regular season battles too, where you're like, okay, how are the matchups going to shake out? You know, and even like Edmonton starting so bad early on, everyone was like, oh, what do they need? They need to sell. They need to, you know, things need to change. McDavid is going to lose interest and be here. And it's just like, you guys are saying this in October. things have totally shifted since, but it's fun. And I feel bad. I mean, maybe not for you being a Rangers fan, but like, I feel like the Devils fans have been kind of waiting for their team to make the jump that, you know, the likes of the Canucks have made, where like they've built that young talent. They're building up there. Now they're a competitive playoff team and they're just still falling short yet again. But it's fun to see like a couple new teams in the cup conversation too, that could make it interesting.
For sure. So two things off of that. Number one, as for the Devils, as somebody who lives close enough, I enjoy when the Devils are bad because I can go to games for $20 or less, which I will never be able to do for the Rangers. Probably ever. Yeah. So
you're not are you even getting like a soda and a hot dog at Madison Square Garden?
That's like $15 or $16. If you get the normal sized hot dog and a soda, that's $15 or $16, not even a beer. But yeah, no, the Devils being bad is good for me personally because I can go to more games. Like last year, as the season went along and I was like, oh, the Devils are for real, and the tickets started inching up from like 20 to 25. And then by the end of the season, when I went to Rangers Devils at the end of the regular season, it was like $180 to get in. And I was like, yeah, the Devils are actually good, but they are fascinating in that the problem is so clear. All they needed was somebody who could make a single save all year.
Yeah.
All they needed was one save at various points. <save. laughs> And their team save percentage is like 880. Like 890. It is awful. And I don't think Lindy Ruff is a good coach, but I don't think he was solely the reason they're playing as badly as they are. And then circling back to what you were saying about the West, the Central's been awesome this year between Winnipeg, Dallas, and Colorado. Any three of those teams could win the division and win the West outright.
Right. I mean, everyone's kind of talking about Saros being shopped at the deadline. Nashville's not going out quietly either, which is fun. I mean, and I like Barry Trotz a lot, and it'll be interesting. I'm not going to speak too soon because obviously anything can happen come Friday, but I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if Saros stays put. I mean, at this point, this is the time when teams have to make their GMs decide like, hey, are we going to be buyers or sellers? Like, are we going into the deadline competitive or are we, you know, are you telling me, hey, like this team isn't ready for playoff time? I don't think Nashville will make it far in the playoffs, especially given
Nashville's done this a few times. Remember the year they got in and Connor Ingram made like 60 saves against Colorado and they still lost in overtime. Nashville does this a lot.
I mean, God, you think back to, what was it, 2017 when they swept the Hawks in the first round? Eighth seed. I was living in Chicago that year. That was that was funny. I'm sorry.
The decline in Chicago, fascinating. That poor child, bro. They got to get Connor Bedard like hiding. Like as soon as the season's over, he needs to go to a desert island and be left alone for 4 months. He is literally a child. Like that's a high school senior.
He's 18. He's not even 19 years old.
Yeah, he's literally a high school senior who's got the magnoscope of the entire league around him. Like, I think about him at All-Star where he was standing next to, I want to say, Sid and McDavid, and PK Subban is like pulling him into the conversation. I'm like, leave that child alone. He doesn't want to be on camera.
Yeah. he's from Vancouver, right? Just leave him, get him a cabin in British Columbia somewhere. Let him. The thing is, I wouldn't be, when do you think the Hawks are going to give him the C? They're going to give him the C. When do you think they give him the C though?
They could do it as soon as next year.
That's what I was thinking.
That's what the Oilers did with McDavid. It was his second year. They made him the captain. He's clearly going to be the face of the team. He's a good player. And he's, you know, the prodigal son arc in hockey actually kind of works out most of the time, unlike the other sports where, like, you know, once every 10, 15 years, you get one of these guys. It was Sid, McDavid. Hell, hockey, you get two for the most part. You know, you look at hockey. Right before Crosby, the year before that was Malkin and Ovechkin in the same draft. Now, McDavid was the draft with Eichel. That 2015 draft class, something shifted. Something in the air changed in that 2015 draft class. Because the league is just, it's really changed. And that's kind of the point of demarcation where you think about McDavid, you think about Eichel, Marner, Noah Hanifin, Matt Barzal. There are so many players in that draft that have kind of changed the scope of the league. And we exist in McDavid's universe now.
We do. It is his world. We purely live in it. That's how do you like Edmonton going into this?
Oh, I don't. I like the Oilers as a concept. I very much enjoy watching them play.
As a concept.
Conceptually, I see the vision. I love Stuart Skinner's mustache. I think it's very awesome. That's my goal every summer is the Stuart Skinner mustache. I do not trust the Oilers a lick. I put them in the same boat as the Leafs and the Hurricanes. Until I see them make a cup final, I'm not going to buy because I've been burned way too many times. They're talented enough, but in the short sample size of an NHL playoff series where you're going to play seven games over 2 weeks, five saves swings an entire series, and the Oilers haven't had that. I mean, last year against the Oilers, there were Oilers fans who wanted Jack Campbell to start games in that first round series over Skinner.
And then the funny thing is, like, they still, and granted, Skinner's having a solid season right now, but, like, they refuse to address that need. Like, it's still like, it'll figure it. We're fine. we'll fix everything else. We'll just leave goaltending there. And that's Carolina, too. Like, not to say I don't think they're, because they've got talented players, but, like, watching them, I'm just like, there's something missing. They don't have it.
They need one more guy. They feel one guy short. Like, if they had Jake Gensel, I'd be scared shitless. That makes them a lot better if they get one more bona fide goal scorer in there. But Carolina's interesting in that they've really tried to, I don't want to say game the system, but manufacture goaltending by, like, having a really good team in front of them and then not investing in goaltending, which I feel is a decent approach if you don't have one of the guys. Like, if you don't have the Vasilevsky, Sorokin, Shesterkin, Saros, if you don't have one of those guys, trying to do what the Hurricanes do makes sense, but it's really hard in the playoffs because that's really in the course of a long regular season, what Carolina does works very well. We have a 5-6 years of Rod Brindamore's track record to know it works. But in the playoffs, where it's a handful of sequences that swing these games, if the other team's guys are just better than yours, there's not a lot you can do. I mean, that's what happened to them against the Bruins the 2 years in a row. It's what happened to them against the Panthers last year. What happened against the Rangers 2 years ago. They're good. It's just the other team's best players are better.
Right. And it's, you know, like, eventually you got to do something to get over that hump. They haven't won an Eastern Conference final game. Like, when? I know they got swept both times. I couldn't tell you the last time
it was probably the year they won the cup.
Or no, because they got swept against Pittsburgh in 2009, right?
That sounds vaguely correct.
Yes. They got, that was the Malkin behind. Yeah.
Yeah.
On Cam Ward. That's right. Okay. Yeah. They have.
Yeah.
See, you got to do something. Like you said, you got to add a goal scorer. You got to something to get over, especially in the East right now too. Like, where
the East feels very wide open.
Yeah.
When you look around, I mean, like I was just saying about the Oilers, it's the same thing with the Leafs. I don't trust Samsonov or Joe Woll in a playoff series. The Bruins, I feel like they kind of missed their window. The Islanders always play the Rangers well, but I'm not really worried about playing them. It's really just Florida, because Florida plays like terrorist hockey where they just beat the shit out of you for seven games.
terrorist hockey.
They just pummel you for seven straight games. And by the end of the series, they either win or you're dead and you go into the next series.
Terrorist hockey.
Matthew Tkachuk is the closest we've got to a terrorist hockey player. He's a menace. I love him too. I wish he was on my team.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, you cover the Flames too, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I knew it was never going to go well. I thought they did okay in the trade, but there's no way trading one of the 20 best players in the league works out for you. It just doesn't.
Right. Do you think Markstrom gets moved before Friday?
If the Devils are delusional, yes. Like, I was doing some envelope math like a week or two ago when I was writing something about Timo Meier. And at that point, they needed to win 17 of their final 21 games to get to 94 points, which is what the Flyers were on pace for a week ago. The Flyers' pace is a little bit lower now, but conservatively, and the Devils have lost two more games since then, conservatively, the Devils are going to need to win like 16 of their final 19 games if they want to make the playoffs. So if you add Markstrom to the team, can he win you one, two, or two more of those? But the Devils haven't won more than four games in a row all season. Their longest win streak is three. I just don't think their math. I think that happens in the summer. I think they either get him. I could see maybe a Gibson move in the summer, a Saros in the summer. But I don't think it makes sense at this point. Why? You're going to have to pay more now than you would in the summer. And you'll have a better idea what your roster looks like. Because they got to decide on Toffoli, too.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
I've been seeing like there's mutual interest to bring him back to LA. I was like, I wouldn't be too. I was like, eh.
Are the Kings an op for you?
I'm sorry?
Are the Kings an op for you? Are they one of your mortal enemies or is it kind of agnostic?
It's at this point. Here's the thing. Back when the Ducks and the Kings are both competitive, it's very heated and I don't like them. I will never like actively like root for them. I mean, I go to games. But I think at this point, it's like, I kind of have to accept my place. Like, literally, like, the rivalry is just so, and it's still a rivalry. The players call it a rivalry. And, you know, that'll always be there, even though it's not as competitive anymore. It will be in a couple years' time. But I think the growth, the more people that get into hockey in Southern California, I'm all for. So I don't mind them seeing success, you know, being successful and getting more people to games and things like that. Do I enjoy when they're successful? No, I don't. It pains me, I will say. But, you know, I'm not out here like punching my pillow over seeing them and their, you know, fast paced rebuild. I don't think Rob Blake has necessarily done a stellar job building this roster into. In which, listen, I say this and like playoffs, anything can happen. Obviously, I know that Dean Lombardi team went from the eighth seed on to win the cup. But I just think in today's game, it's much harder to do that. And I, you know, with all due respect to Rich, with Cam Talbot, I don't think their goaltending, that's not a solution. I'm sorry. You can't go out and know that goaltending is a glaring problem for you and say that Cam Talbot is your answer, especially when you're in a Western Conference like that and you haven't been able to get past the Oilers the last 2 years in a row. Like, it's just, and the Oilers are out here, like you said, the concept is good, but they're out here like loading up. They're out here trying to get better around the deadline time. And the Kings, like,
they've been weirdly quiet.
And I was talking to, you know, the guy I went to the game with a couple of days ago. I was like, what do you think, you know, they're going to do at the deadline? He's like, no, I think this team is set. I was like, this team, you better hope this team isn't set here.
No.
I mean, there was times, I mean, you're watching them still too. And like, start of the season, they were playing some great hockey, but then, you know, like plenty of opportunities, plenty of chances. Just feels like with the amount of talent on that team, they just can't finish on a lot of opportunities here. And listen, a lot of fun players on that team too. Like, I love the resurgence of Quentin Byfield, not resurgence, I should say, but like, you know, kind of like the same as, you know, Alexi Lafreniere, same as, Slavkovsky out in Montreal. Like, it's ridiculous to be calling these kids busts before their 21st birthday. Like, I just, why are we doing that? Like, just because a kid doesn't come out of the draft and immediately is a superstar, like, doesn't mean he's a bust. So I'm all for seeing these guys finally shut some of their critics up. But I don't want to speak too soon, because obviously if the Kings fans see this, they'll obviously clip this and be like, but I mean, I don't see them making it far with the roster that they have right now. I feel like, you know, they're not better than Colorado. They're not better than Dallas. They're not better than Winnipeg. I don't think they're better than Edmonton either. So, but Are they not? Yes, I will say least favorite team in the league for sure. As far as like a fan goes, there's obviously teams that just annoy me. I can't stand, you know, more so than that. But as like a far as a rival, yeah, it's the Kings.
That the Kings are on my op list, and so are the Lightning. Those are the two teams the Rangers don't haven't beaten in the playoffs when it's mattered. You know, everybody else we've at least traded series wins with. Like Pittsburgh kicked our ass a couple times, but we got them back. Same thing with Washington. Same thing with Carolina. Same thing with the Devils. Yeah. So, but the Lightning we've never beaten in a series that mattered. And the Kings, the one time they get poor Henrik Lundqvist to the Cup final, it's just him and a bunch of guys. So I feel you. Pierre-Luc Dubois is living my dream though. Anti-work king getting paid $8.5 million to get tattoos and look pretty in Southern California. He is living
the
dream.
I felt bad. Like he's given his history. It was very easy when the Kings lost what 13 out of 15,
something like that. Yeah.
That bad stretch they had back in January, after Christmas or New Year's. But it was so easy to point the blame at him, especially after Doughty came out and was like, some of our guys are worried about their stat sheet. I was like, clearly not Dubois. I mean, otherwise that'd be a much better stat sheet there. But it's so easy to like turn the blame onto him. Meanwhile, like there's so many other things that were going wrong and not clicking with that team. But hey, listen, his history kind of speaks for itself in that regard. Granted, I think very clear as day now, the Winnipeg Jets will make that trade, you know, 10 times over if done again. But, I mean, you don't like a guy coming in. I mean, it's not easy going into a locker room knowing you're making $8.5 million a year and you're not performing the way you need to and your head coach is calling you out. And you know, I mean, these guys aren't stupid. They know they're walking into the locker room. They know they're taking the ice and they're not performing the way that they need to. And maybe that accountability is important. I don't think Doughty should have been like, oh, some of our guys, you know.
Very passive aggressive for a grown man. Yeah,
totally, totally. From a guy that, you know, listen, like, that's a guy that's been very candid with the media before. I was like, just say names. Like, dude, you're a veteran. You've earned that right. Just kind of just start spitballing names out there. You're a leader. Something Kopitar would never do.
Yeah. God bless Kopitar. God bless. Going to go to the Hall on roller skates. One of the best hockey players ever from Europe. Easily one of the, I would say their best player in the history of their franchise. And really underrated because nobody on the East Coast other than me stays up to watch 10 o'clock starts.
Oh, if he's on an Eastern Conference team,
he's Bergeron. He gets the Bergeron treatment. Yeah.
I'll take Kopitar over Bergeron any day. That's my hot take.
That's getting clipped and that's getting posted. So I that's a good take. I understand it. I don't know if I agree with it. That's the thing.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough.
That's generally where I come from at this point.
Bruins Twitter's going to come after. I didn't say there's no disrespect to Bergeron.
No, Bergeron's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. That's a reasonable take that's grounded that I understand even if I disagree with. That's the thing that gets lost on people is people can have different opinions. That's okay. As long as it's like just not shit posting, fine, yeah,
there's basis for it,
yeah, exactly.
Like, okay, I can see where you're coming with that. Would I personally like agree with that or say it? No, but there's some like Twitter, it's so easy to just quote tweet and be like, no, dumb take, or like react to it, which granted I do that sometimes
too. of course being a hater is fun.
Exactly, because I'll see something come across my feed. It's easy to put a little SpongeBob picture and then just go about my day. But no, I love that. I think that's, like you said, that's where it gets lost. And like some people, it's very easy to just be like, are you dumb? Are you stupid? Like,
yes, I am dumb. I am stupid. I admit this all the time. It's one of my go-to defenses. Anytime someone calls me out, I'm like, yeah, I am stupid. I acknowledge I'm stupid. I am
stupid. You're right. You caught me. Hands up.
Yeah. Dead ass, though. Last thing before I get you out of here. What are you most excited to see down the stretch going into the playoffs?
Ooh, that's a good question. Cup playoffs are my favorite time of year just because my schedule is booked. Like, yeah. I know you're a baseball guy too. I don't pay attention to baseball until
hockey's
like,
over.
That's why, and it works out great because the Dodgers always have a slow April and slow May, and they don't get going until like June, July, where they like really start figuring out, okay, things may be different with Ohtani and Yamamoto on the team this year, hopefully, but in years past, they've usually been slow. So I'm like, all right, I'm not worried about that. There's 162 games here. It's fine. But it's just like your nights are booked, especially the first round.
Oh, it's the best.
Just cranking out games. You're like, all right, I am glued to my TV from West Coast, you know, 4 o'clock until 9:30, 10. I don't know how you guys. Oh, actually, I do. I lived on the East Coast.
But I don't sleep. That's the answer to your question. I don't sleep. That was the best, where they would start the game at 6:30 on CNBC, not even NBCSN, on CNBC. And then 7, 7:30, yes. 8, 9, 10, six games a night. It was great. I mean, that's why bubble hockey was incredible. It was 13 straight hours of hockey. I rotted into my couch. I should have grown roots by the end of the first round of that series. That was amazing. During the lulls in the hockey games, you could put basketball on too, and it was playoff basketball. Yeah. That's the best. This is my favorite time of year, and we can end on this note, where we get into the hockey playoffs, the basketball playoffs, the NFL draft, the Masters, the start of the baseball season, and March Madness. This is the best stretch of the year because all that's on is sports and you don't have to have any thoughts.
Right. It's kind of like, and then it's kind of like, it's even better because some people say October is the best month because you've got football season, you've got, you know, MLB playoffs, you've got the start of basketball, you got the start of hockey, college football's in play too. I love the fall, so I like October, but totally as far as like March, April excitement goes, it's totally this time of year. And there's, you know, and I feel like it's such a, like a, not boomer thing to say, but like a please like my sport thing to say.
Oh, it is.
Like, there's nothing like playoff hockey. And like,
it's true though. That's the thing. It really is. Like, I hate being that guy, but like during the bubble playoffs, I was at a friend's house and we were watching Vancouver and Vegas in the backyard. And this person doesn't give a shit about hockey. After the first period, he didn't get up for the rest of the game because he was that locked in. Playoff hockey is genuinely that good. It's really a shame we don't do a better job of conveying that to people.
Literally. And I was actually on Carlin Baith, who does the King's sideline reporting. I did something with her on Monday now, I want to say. And she said, hey, if there's somebody that wants to get into hockey, like, what would you suggest for them to do? I said, go to a game, like even a playoff game. Like, if you've never been and you go, like, there's just experiencing it in, like, on TV, obviously intense to watch, but you're experiencing it in person. Like, you can't not walk out of there and just be so amped, so excited. I mean, it's hopefully, you know, given the game results, one thing if you're like lifelong fan, you're walking out of there and they just got blown out. But just the atmosphere, the environment, and I went to an NBA game this week and it's just not like experiencing that live versus a hockey game. It's just not the same.
There's a lot more stopping and starting in basketball. That's the thing.
Hockey's like sharing 2 points. Yay. Yeah. Oh, yay.
And you do that like 80 times a game now because the scores are in the 130s every two and three.
It's not till like the fourth quarter when everyone's like really like, oh yeah, like really intense. Whereas like hockey, it's like the fourth quarter of a basketball game for three periods, with the exception of last night. Obviously that Ducks game was sitting there, I was like, okay, let's get it going. Let's get this going here. Come on.
You're a trooper.
I'm missing a Colorado-Detroit game to sit here and watch this.
But. You're a trooper. I know I've said the last thing like four times, but the thing, I was talking about this with somebody the other day, that the game I went to like 28 Ranger games in 2019 when they were god awful, one of the worst teams in the entire league. But when you have that access and it is that cheap to go, it was like $60, $70 to get in most nights, which I had never seen in my life for the Rangers. And
that's crazy. What from am I? MSG, that's crazy.
They were that bad. Yeah. They were an atrocity to the sport of hockey. I went to a game against the Bruins. They lost 7-2, and Cody McLeod fought Adam McQuaid three times and got knocked down all three times. That may be the single worst hockey game I've ever been to. But going to the game is so much more fun. That's why the Devils being bad, the Islanders being bad is good, because I can genuinely suggest let's go to a hockey game as plans and people don't laugh at you. I can't say let's go to a Ranger game as plans because that's a $200 night. If I say let's go to a Devils game on a Thursday and it's $20, that's a lot more doable.
Totally. Totally. I mean, the ticket's cheaper than what you're spending on beer and everything.
Absolutely. You understand. You really do understand.
Exactly. And so, I don't know. I feel like so many people be like, oh, I don't want to go. Like, oh, they're not a good team. Oh, like, they're not playing a good team. I was like, that's not the point.
The point is to have fun.
Exactly. We love the sports, like what Peter Griffin, because this is fun. We're having fun.
That's exactly what it is, though. And all my friends are like, how do you care that much? And I can't explain it. Like, genuinely, I cannot explain it.
You're like, this because this is the one thing that brings me happiness. Okay. Like,
yeah. And I've only been really happy with my hockey team like twice in my entire life. So every now and then when they are good, it really is that exciting.
That's why, like, I remember watching Fever Pitch, you know, the movie with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore. And I was like, you know, like that, you know, the girl, like, her friends all think he's really weird, like, for obsessing about the Red Sox that much. I was like, that's really not that weird.
It's really not. Like, in all honesty, I know a lot of people that behave that way. Maybe not as neurotically, but I know a lot of people who are like that about their teams. But
right. Yeah, maybe not your entire apartment decorated like Fenway Park, but, like, behave like that, yes. I mean, God, I still can't fathom, and I know people have season tickets for a lot of things. And, like, I get it for, like, hockey games, basketball games, football. Baseball, I don't understand. Like, that's a lot of baseball. Like, you want to sit three games in a row you buy tickets for. You want to sit out in the sun, which, listen, I love baseball games. I love baseball in the summer. Don't
baseball get me has the best vibes. When you totally. Go to just hang out, especially if you go with fun people, that's the best part of going to a baseball game. With all the dead time, you really get to hang out.
And a good ballpark, too. That's important. Like, I loved when I lived in New York. City Field was so fun to the go best. To. Great food, beautiful ballpark, great. You walk around places, whereas, like, some other ballparks, you just can't. Like, Fenway is and Wrigley are cool, but, like, they don't have that. It's not easy to, like, get up, walk around. They don't have the great food options, which I think best food is easily Citi Field. That best not, offerings there.
You're not getting an argument from me. We've definitely gotten off the rails here a little bit. That'll do it.
We're talking hockey now.
Shit happens. It's okay. It's okay. Sorry. Hopefully you haven't missed any trades or anything too important in the last hour. That'll do it for this Liberty Blue conversation. Thank you so much for swinging by. We will be back. Live deadline coverage, 1 o'clock to 3:30-ish tomorrow. Talk to you guys real soon.